welcome in Matthew. Not related, but still.
It is. There is another great Matthew here in the Sacramento area. You know what? Real quick, I just want to tell everybody, if you haven't already, go to my Twitter, at KingKC.
Well, thank God. Thank God that's what it is, because that's not what the 13th round says.
Yeah, well, I had to get that out of there. But like I said, my guy, he was telling me 2 years ago, he's like, hey, man, change that up. change that up, man. I'm going to tell you right now. I talked to him yesterday. He's like, I'm glad you changed that up. I told you to change it up. But
Matt, you remember KC's old Twitter handle?
Well.
You mean IMK?
That's the one. Yep, that's that the one. One. Yeah, that's the one.
I should change it to IMK redacted.
don't make finding your Twitter account harder than it is.
But go on there. I retweeted something that I saw yesterday that just brought me so much joy. Did you see that 4 minutes of Jason Williams playing adult league basketball?
Oh, I did. Yeah.
That is... I can't say he's my favorite King, because I just really can't choose, but he's top five.
Who's your favorite, Matt? Who's your favorite King of all time?
It's funny you mentioned, like, we've had a good week for, like, wholesome King's moments, because I grew up a diehard fan of Mike Bibby. So to see the Bibby and Doug Christie video for the jersey announcement, shout out to Bibby for spoiling it. I know he got it talking to, and he might not get to do that opportunity ever again.
Don't put Mike in charge of anything.
The video itself was fantastic. Doug was excellent in it. Jackie's cameo was fantastic in it as well. And the fact that they're bringing those purple back, those purples back. I have a purple Bibby jersey from 2004 that looks just like that. So, but J. Will was my first ever favorite player when I was a kid, because I watched him play my first ever game when I was like 6 or 7 years old. My uncle took me, and it was either his rookie year or his second year in the league. And he captivated me like he captivated so many as a kid. So J. Will was my first ever favorite player. And then he got traded for Mike Bibby. And then as I learned basketball, I fell in love with Mike Bibby and the way he played, and Big Shot Bibby too. So Kings point guards have a special place in my heart.
I'm thinking about this right now, and it's in no particular order. I think my five is Chris, DeMarcus, J. Will. And you know what? I think Fox and Monk are in my top five. Mm. You know Malik is my boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
When are you trading him?
Wow.
Never.
Wow.
Well, wow, Matt, funny, just you call a lot of people your boy and then try and trade him.
Matt just cutting right to the chase here.
Who? I haven't tried to trade anybody in months.
I look forward to the deal. Hey, what about Malik Monk for Cam Johnson? I look forward to that.
Wait till it becomes public how many times he's tried to trade me.
Oh, no, that's Cam. Somebody, Travis in the Matthews Metro chat here says, no, Mitch. I think Fox and Monk can move. And Mitch is my boy. I'm not saying who's the best. I'm just saying, you know what I don't like is Mitch don't show us enough love. I think that's why I get upset with Mitch.
That's all right.
I'm going to get a Mitch jersey, though. I just seen that.
Oh, good. All right. No, add it to the never-ending list of jerseys.
I'm getting that Mitch jersey. I seen it the other day. I was like, nah, I got to pick that up. But Mitch, he always leans more towards the 40 games he played with the Warriors than the time he played here. And I'm like, come on, Mitch, don't do that.
Matt, we've been looking back at the KC's top 20 games of the Kings season. And one thing we realized is how much of this season centered around Malik Monk. We just had the Minnesota game where he scored 35 second half points, 39 total, and just was obviously the hero of that game. And it's like the second or third one that we've had like that. And we joke like, man, everything that happened last year seemed to center around Malik Monk. All the way up until he got hurt against Dallas and it was over, and like did everything from there seemed to center around the fact that Malik Monk wasn't around. He was such a massive part of what the Kings were trying to do last year.
Malik Monk was the third best player on the Kings, and it wasn't close. I mean, he was number three, and there was a big gap before I think Keegan was at number four. Now, I think there's also a luxury to that, because Malik Monk is so important and his performances stand out to us so much, because in Sacramento, not that we take it for granted, but we've gotten used to the DeMontis Sabonis triple doubles or double doubles by halftime. We've gotten used to the De'Aaron Fox performances to where he could either take over a quarter and close out a game, or he could score 30 or sometimes 40 points. And Fox did that a number of times last season. So Fox and Sabonis are very much the foundation of what the Sacramento Kings do, of course. But Malik Monk was that extra shot of energy, that energizer bunny, which I know Mike Brown and many Kings fans loved with the second unit coming off the bench. I'm still a strong believer in the idea that Malik Monk should be in your starting lineup. You should be starting, putting your best foot forward. And I know that's a conversation that will continue to pick up steam as we get into actual training camp itself. And I hope, whether it's in a preseason game or in training camp or something, we at least get a look at that. But Malik Monk is 100%. Like, losing Malik Monk this offseason would have been catastrophic for this team. Mm. No, I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's why we were so worried and so concerned about it going into the offseason and kind of the natural pessimism that comes with historically following the Sacramento Kings. We were all kind of mentally gearing up for, yeah, Malik's going to go take a bag, go elsewhere, and the Kings are going to have to figure out how to replace him. Sacramento, thankfully, does not have to deal with that problem. Malik's coming back. He's going to be here for a long time. And the addition of DeMar DeRozan on top of that. I'm not expecting the Sacramento Kings to be vaulted into any kind of championship conversation, but there's just so many people sleeping on Sacramento, and specifically sleeping on this team's ability, multifaceted, to just come at you from multiple different angles, and any one of four or five guys can dominate you on a nightly basis. That's what Sacramento is setting themselves up for. That's what has me most excited for opening night versus Minnesota. Maybe it's a combination of guys. Maybe Fox goes for 40 to open up the season. Maybe DeMar DeRozan comes out and says, hey, this is my I'm welcome to Sacramento moment. He drops like 30. But game planning for Sacramento's offense is going to be a nightmare for other teams.
Matt, what specifically, like, what would be the reasoning? I know you've talked about it ad nauseum this summer, but I'd love to hear it again. As to, like, why you think Malik should start at the two, you know, and I think me and you might be two man wolf pack on that one, because I think he should start too. But that, a lot of people think that the phrase people always use is he's better off the bench, even though we have no idea if he's better or not. But
literally has never started a game for Sacramento.
We have no idea. But like, what's your thinking when you say he should start?
Number one, you put your best five out there. I just think you put your best five out there and you start a game strong. Number two, the primary argument for keeping Malik out of the starting lineup, it doesn't have to go away because he's starting. What I mean by that is Malik, just because Malik starts doesn't mean he can't play with the second unit and primarily lead that second unit. In fact, I would expect that to still be a large responsibility of his. And I know we've talked about this before. Mike Brown subs De'Aaron Fox out of the game first every single game. It's part of his rotation. So you can still do the same thing. Have Fox sub out. Have a bench player or two, whether it's Keon or Kevin Herter or whoever it is. Have Malik Monk run with that second unit and stagger those lineups, because one of Fox, DeRozan, or Sabonis is going to be on the floor at all times, and most of the time at least two of them are going to be on the floor, in my opinion. So you can still have Monk playing a big chunk of minutes. And then number three is minutes. Malik Monk played 26 minutes a game last season. That's the biggest criticism I have towards Mike Brown. And you know how much I love Mike Brown and support Mike Brown. Mike Brown needs to be playing Malik Monk more. And if the reasoning for not being able to get Malik 30 minutes a night is because of his rotation and playing him with the second unit, you're handicapping yourself. Now, unless you start rolling out Malik Monk for 30 minutes and those extra 4 to 5 minutes a night he's getting, he's less effective because maybe he's tired or whatever the case may be. But we haven't seen that yet. Malik Monk deserves to be playing more than 26 minutes a night, especially considering, like I said last season, he was your top three player. Or he's your third best player. And until proven otherwise, well, DeMar DeRozan might have taken that mantle from him, but until proven otherwise, that's what we should expect him to continue to be.
And Matt, I think your latest, it wasn't your latest, it was one of the close ones, podcast was titled, he demand to start with the picture of Malik Monk, and you think he should walk in and flip the table over. You didn't say this, I'm envisioning in my head. He should walk in and flip the table over and say, I'm the starting two, and then walk out.
So it was referencing, it's not a hypothetical scenario, because it was referencing one of the things that Malik said when we talked to him after he signed his contract extension. He said first and foremost, he'll do whatever role is expected of him. He'll do what's asked of him. Like, Malik is not the kind of guy that's going to walk in and go, I just signed my contract, I'm the starting two guard, ain't nobody playing above me, ain't nobody better than me, give me the basketball. Like, that's not who Malik is. Malik is going to, what he said is, he has his voice, and he now feels, especially with the backing of the organization in the form of a new contract for multiple years and a commitment from the organization that he is a part of this core going forward, he feels confident and comfortable, not that he didn't before, but he now especially feels comfortable voicing if he feels he needs to start or not. So that podcast explored the concept of what would have to happen, or what would lead Malik to feel like he would need to make that proclamation of, hey, we all know he wants to start. I'm sure he's told Mike Brown and every staff member in that building a million times he wants to start. Nobody in the Kings organization doesn't know that Malik Monk wants to start. Yeah. Is what would it take for Malik to actually say that? Whether it's in a team meeting or privately, go to Mike Brown's office, knock on the door and go, yo, Mike, you need to be starting me. Mm. Something's not working. I need to start. And to me, what makes sense in that scenario is, let's say you're starting Keon Ellis, right? And let's say offensively, this team still is not at where it could be, or offensively, they're starting slow. I'm not blaming Keon for that, but you're not touching the rest of that starting lineup. The other four guys are solidified.
Right.
Put Malik Monk in there. Try and hit the ground running right out of the gate and build a 10-point lead in the first couple of minutes, and then start to stagger your rotations like you normally do. Like, put your best foot forward. Now, if the Kings are off to a rough start with Keon Ellis starting, offensively they're playing well, but defensively there's a problem, then Malik doesn't have a leg to stand on, because Malik can't go, yeah, put me in because I'll improve the defense. We all know that's not happening. So Malik, I feel, is going to voice his demanding to start. Demanding is such a harsh word, but Malik, if this team gets to a point that he feels that they are underperforming because he is not starting, he is going to voice that, and it'll be interesting to see, one, what that scenario is, and two, how Mike or the Kings handle that if it comes to it.
And the interesting thing about that is, if he starts the season on the bench and he gets to that point, it feels like things have gone wrong. So whatever happens at the start of the season, that's probably what we want to continue to happen for the rest of the season, right? Mm. Like that, at least me, I'll speak for myself, because if he's coming off the bench and, you know, in that scenario, Matt, he's like, yo, this ain't working, I need to be starting. It feels like to get to that point, it would be like bad, like, couple games under 500. Like, I don't think if they're a couple games over 500, he's gonna be like, this is terrible, like, I need to be starting. Like, it seems like that's the red button, so to speak, for Malik, and nobody wants that. So whatever the season starts off with, that's what I want it to be for the whole season.
And thinking of it too, it sounds like most people believe the main battle for the starting two guard spot is between Keon and Kevin. Whichever route the Sacramento Kings go, at this point in time, I'm putting my money on Keon. Whichever route they go, if, knock on wood, let's say Keon is the starter and Keon gets hurt, just put Malik into the starting spot in that point. Like, we don't have to continue to force Malik Monk with the second unit and second unit alone and plug these other guys in the starting two spot. You were fortunate, and the Kings were fortunate last season that in the games where Fox was out and Monk was out, that they had a Keon Ellis that was ready, willing, and able to step up and fill that void. And the Sacramento Kings still ultimately missed the playoffs. Malik Monk is one of the best players on this team. He's going to space the floor with the offense, and spacing has been such a talking point and concern for Sacramento with the addition of DeMar DeRozan. And he provides you a now third ball handler on the floor when playing with Fox and with DeMar DeRozan. Now, defensively, if that lineup is a nightmare, okay, you learned your lesson, you saw it, you figured it out, and it's not Malik's fault necessarily, but that's where you go, okay, we need Keon's skill set, and you make that move at that point in time. Show us what it looks like, because I believe that Malik is part of the best group of Kings players that you can put together, and that's what I want the Kings to start with. Hmm.
You see the NBA.com 30 teams in 30 days thing they posted today? They covered Sacramento today. And, well, I'll be damned. One, I think the Sean Powell, brother, he says he's been covering the NBA for more than 25 years. I didn't get that impression by just a couple of lines. But, and I'll read the lines to you. No, don't get me wrong. I feel like this was a favorable review for Sacramento. There's just a line that stood out to me. This is what he wrote. There again, there's breaking down acquisitions, although, you know, the whole thing. How far can the Kings go? Sacramento was built to compete with the top half of the West. Last season may end up as a small setback, especially with DeRozan aboard. He'll give the team an added dimension, leadership, and a source of reliability in the fourth quarter. Those factors could make all the difference in the seedings. Do we dare suggest that the Kings are the best team in California? Have those words ever been written before? Sir. Salute to the franchise for arriving at this stage. If all goes well, the Kings could sneak into late May, but that's a best-case scenario.
Oh, well, thank you.
A little backhanded compliment. Yeah, we didn't need that. This team might sneak into May, but probably not.
They can't help themselves.
That was completely uncalled
for. I thought his write-up was
fair.
Yeah, I thought it was fair. There's a little digs in there, but he wrote about DeMar. He seems to be one of the four guys that likes the DeMar DeRozan signing. But the line that really, really stood out to me, it wasn't the thing about California, because I don't think there's a question that the Kings are the best team in California. Mm. I think it was Sacramento was built to compete with the top half of the West.
I think they are.
That's Denver. That's Minnesota. That's the Oklahoma City. Those are the teams that everybody loves so much.
I think they are, man. And until I see different, I'm going to feel that they're going to be a top four team in the regular season. And they're going to have the horses now with DeMar DeRozan there to be able to be successful in the postseason. I think DeMar, the more I watch some of these games and watch some of these old games and I look for like what this team was missing, It really feels like he checks off a good number of those boxes. Not all of them. You need a defender, all this stuff. I get that. But the leadership, the consistency, the shot-making ability, it feels like he hits all those points, and I don't think it's a lot that kept the Kings from being near the top last year, outside of, you know, injuries and those things. The roster, I don't think it's a lot that kept them from being a 4 or 5 seed. Mm. They couldn't be consistent last year. I think he helps with that a lot.
What I think the Kings are and have become is a team that you're going to hear the talking heads on NBA TV or whatever, you're going to hear people say, oh man, you don't want to take on that team. You don't want to face that team in a best of seven series. Something similar was said about the Sacramento Kings a couple of years ago. But in that context, it was this team has a bunch of momentum and they're unknown, right? The Kings are playing well. The beam, the vibes are back. That team is on a roll. You don't really want to try and get in front of that and want to be the team to stop that. Ultimately, the Golden State Warriors were able to. This year, it's different, though, in my opinion. This year, it's you have a roster that I think the Sacramento Kings, since the Doug Christie era, the Kings have the best individual defenders they've had on this roster in a very, very long time. They got three of them. Keegan, De'Aaron, and Keon. All three really, really solid individual defenders that teams have to at least game plan for. Now, there's a big question mark about, this is another podcast I did last week. There's a big question mark about the wing defense and how much Keegan can handle with the responsibilities that he's going to have. He's going to be the guy guarding LeBron. He's going to be the guy guarding KD. He's going to be the guy trying to guard Giannis Antetokounmpo, if that's even possible. So there's still questions about Sacramento defensively, of course, but I think the Kings have the most individual defensive talent that they've had in a very long time on this roster. And on top of that, their offense is still very lethal before the addition of the isolation specialist in DeMar DeRozan. So I genuinely think this is a Kings team that not only, like we talked about earlier, is going to be difficult to game plan for. This is a Sacramento Kings team that whether you are a favorite in a series or not, you're going to feel like you have to go to war to beat consistently, or to beat four times. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting ahead of ourselves because the Kings have to get back there, but maybe I'm getting ahead of, like, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself too, and getting like a little too cocky. I don't see a scenario, barring injury, of course, I don't see a scenario where this team is not a postseason team. They're just way too talented and another year older and another year together.
You talked about the defense there, and there was another interesting line in here. I'm not going to read it. It doesn't matter. It just sparks some thought in my head. You talk about the defense, the wing defense, and all of that. And we know Kevin Huerter doesn't necessarily defend the way that Mike wants him to, just to put it in its like nicest way imaginable. And, you know, we have Kevin Huerter coming back from this injury. We hope, and I'm of the belief, I'll go on record, put it on wax.
Okay.
I think Kevin Huerter is going to have a bounce back here.
Okay.
I think he's going to be a lot better than he was. He was terrible last year. I think that was his worst professional season. I think he's going to have a much better year this year, fellas. But if he doesn't, are we looking at a real situation where Kevin Herter's like DNP CD? Mm. Like he's out of the lineup?
I think Huerter might have, for lack of a better term, I think Huerter might have a quick hook this season. Mm. Whether it's as a starter or coming off the bench, if Kevin Huerter starts a game and he's 0-4, he might not come back in because of just the talent that's around him. And I think Kevin is aware of that. And again, it falls back into the Kings just don't have time to wait for anybody. They can't take games off. They can't take games lightly. They can't feel like one of these other teams in the Western Conference that feels like, hey, we just get to the playoffs. And then once we get to the playoffs, we catch fire and we do what the Kansas City Chiefs did last year and all of a sudden become the best team in football again. Like the Kings can't afford to think that way. And if they're going to accomplish actually breaking that 50-win threshold that so many of us are eyeing, they're going to need to be on it and locked in the best versions of themselves a vast majority of the time. Because even then, there are going to be games where they look really, really good and they lose just because of the competition in the Western Conference alone. So it's not a anti-Kevin Huerter thing. It's not a Kevin Huerter bashing thing. It's the reality of Kevin Huerter really with this team has one primary job. You space the floor, you knock down shots. If you're not hitting, there's going to be other guys that either you're going to find another guy that gets the opportunity off the bench, or those minutes are just going to go to everybody else. And Mike Brown has clearly shown that he's willing to lean heavily on guys and give guys big minutes if that's what he feels he needs to do to win. So Kevin has to bounce back in terms of knocking down shots, but he's also not alone in that. Like, there are other guys on this roster that if they're not performing and playing their primary role on the defensive side of things for Kevin too, Kevin just has to buy into what Sacramento's trying to do team defensively. Same thing with Malik, right? Just buy into team defense and do your best to move your feet, guard with your chest, not with your hands, and just try and communicate on the defensive end of the floor. If you can do that, you're good enough of an offensive player to be able to stay on the floor and not be played out of games. But we know Kevin Huerter is going to be targeted every time he's on the floor on defense. So if Kevin's not knocking down shots and other guys, Trey Lyles is another example. I think Trey needs to have a bounce back year too. Trey was in and out of the lineup last year with injuries. Trey Lyles is one of those guys as well, where if he's coming in and he's not grabbing rebounds and spacing the floor and knocking down shots too, I can see those minutes dwindling away and diminishing, and maybe more goes to Keegan or more goes to Len or whatever the case may be. The Kings just need guys to
Jay
stay
Crowder
ready and perform. Jay Crowder, sure.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, like, to, you know, who you were thinking of might have that same type of quick hook, because I feel the same way you do, Damian. Kevin's at least early, until he, you know, maybe gains some goodwill. When he gets in there, he's got to produce at whatever level Mike Brown is looking for.
Well, you say when he gets in there, you don't think he's starting?
I don't think so. Okay. I'm starting to lean to, I think it's going to be Keon. I thought for a long time it was going to be Malik, but lately I just feel like it might be Keon. But I was.
And by the way, nothing has happened.
No,
it's just been so damn long. Our minds just keep changing. Because this is the longest offseason in history.
Well, one thing did happen. Kings put out that statement.
Okay, oh, yeah.
And called Kevin Herter a forward.
Kings forward Kevin Herter. That's right.
not a guard anymore.
That's right, yeah.
So that was interesting. It was just interesting to me.
Interesting. Yeah.
But, Matt, I was going to ask you, like, what other players you think? You think Trey Lyles is in that ball? I feel like Mike Brown really trusts Trey Lyles. I think he's got a longer leash or one of the longer leashes of anyone on the roster. But you see a little different then, huh?
Well, Trey, I think, has a significantly longer leash than Kevin Herter does, specifically because there's not a logjam at his position. Like, whether they want to call Kevin Herter a forward or a guard or not, there are so many guards on this roster that can step up, including a guy like Jordan McLaughlin, who I think Mike Brown is going to love because he seems to bring the skill set that Mike Brown really values. So, and then maybe when Devin Carter is healthy, who knows what Devin Carter looks like, although he might not play at all his rookie season. We have no idea. So Trey Lyles just is another guy to me that, again, it's if you're not performing your role off the bench, I think the Kings will not hesitate. Mike Brown will not hesitate to move away from you. If that's what he feels is the best thing to help the Sacramento Kings team win, like there's nothing guaranteed for this bench unit unless Malik Monk is on the bench unit. And even Malik, like we talked about earlier, was not playing as much last season as he should have. And there were a couple of games last season where Malik was getting quick hooks and Malik was coming out of games and not getting back in for a long time. And everyone in the Golden 1 Center was looking around going, is Malik hurt? Like, what's going on? Why is he not? Mike is clearly willing to, if players are not performing the way that he feels they need to play in order to win, he will move in a different direction. Kevin Herter's a guy that I could see that happening for. I could see that happening for Trey. I could see that happening for Alex Len. I could see that happening for Jared McLaughlin. Like, there is no time for the Sacramento Kings to be waiting. And hopefully Mike Brown and the Kings have the depth or the endurance to put heavy minutes on the starters if that's the case.
I think for those that forgot the games that Malik got the quick hook, just try to remember the ones where he cussed out Mike Brown on the sidelines. It's those. those games kind of go hand in hand there. Also, Shohei Ohtani hit home run number 49 for those that
This is a great day in San Francisco Giants history. This is fantastic. Fantastic. Giants get eliminated.
We're on the verge
Shohei
of history.
About to go 60-60. That's what he's about to do.
Happen. It's
far. This guy far on. This guy.
He's handling the Giants' poor season well, Matt, as you can see.
We don't need to talk about how I'm handling things in Oakland, so.
Well,
can relate, buddy.
I guess we don't. I mean, I think everybody could be excited to see history. We're one home run away from the very first ever 50-50
season. Yay.
John Fisher can't wait to see Shohei Ohtani hit home runs at Sutter Health Park.
Wow.
All right. Everybody, back up. Everybody, back up.
Mind your business. That's all. Mind your business.
Oh, man. I can't believe DeMar DeRozan hasn't been on Locked On Kings or D'Lo and KC. I think we're the only two shows on the planet.
Sounds about right.
That DeMar DeRozan has. Every day I wake up, DeMar DeRozan was on The Breakfast Club. DeMar DeRozan was talking to Colin Cowherd.
Like, DeMar DeRozan was on The View.
Like, what?
DeMar DeRozan on Kelly Clarkson.
Like, what did we do to piss people off, Matt?
I just ordered his book, so hopefully he'll just appear in my living room and drop it off to me, and then we can start having a conversation then. I'm looking forward to his book, though. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah,
he kind of broke open the door for the mental health conversation. And I think, I know he was asked a lot about championships and Toronto and all of that, and, of course, his time in Los Angeles. That might be his legacy. Mm-hmm. What he did, I think Kevin Love was really, really quick to follow that. That could wind up being DeMar's true legacy in basketball and in sports. Him kind of kicking that door down and having that conversation about mental health.
And it was such a taboo conversation too. And he made it more comfortable. And what I like about DeMar DeRozan is he made talking about mental health the same way you talk about working on your body or getting in shape in training camp or hitting the weight room to put on the necessary pounds to work on your post game. Right. It's like your mental health, you need to work on and sharpen just like you don't skip leg day. Right. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate DeMar for that. And it's crazy how much just mental health in general, because I know I've had my own mental health journey and stuff like that, and being able to break down the walls and taboos of therapy and of psychology and just whatever the case may be, to be able to have those conversations and to have someone like him, who I'm sure dealt with his fair share of stuff too, with all the things that were said about him and time in Toronto. Cause I don't remember, I mean, I remember him being a very, very, very good player in Toronto. I also remember everybody and their mother questioning whether or not he could get the job done in Toronto. And then the Raptors get rid of him and they win a championship with the guy that they replaced him. Like, that's not easy for any competitor or any human being to deal with. Mm-hmm. So for DeMar to go through, I'm sure, what he's gone through, but even so, to speak up for other people and just to make the conversation more normal. I mean, that's another just example of what the Sacramento Kings are getting, not just on the floor, but in the locker room with this team too. Is, you don't think DeMar DeRozan can help this team mentally focus and have the right mindset and lock in on the grind of expectations and the mental load of trying to make it deep into the postseason and stay locked in for as long as possible? Like, DeMar is an asset in so many ways outside of just basketball.
Well said, Matt, first of all. Second of all, we got ABC 10's Matt George here.
Oh, Very good. Look at you.
ABC 10's Matt George here knows everything about sports here in the city of Sacramento. And I think the front office sports article had like literally a week ago at this time, it kind of dropped about Sac State wanting to go into the Pac-12. You've had a week to kind of review this whole situation. Like, what you think about that? How realistic do you think it is?
I think it's an uphill climb, but it's nothing new for the city, right? Like, Sacramento, resiliency is what comes to mind, right? I'm reopening a can of worms here, whether I like it or not, Sacramento going from a position of having just a minor league baseball team to now Major League Baseball coming here. We know what's happened with the MLS and the Sacramento Republic FC, but how quickly the Sacramento Republic FC took over. D'Lo, I heard what you said about the Sacramento Monarchs, and I completely agree. Keeping the Sacramento Kings here, right? This city is resilient, and when the city sets its mind to something, it typically goes out and gets the job done, especially in the world of professional sports and entertainment. So I don't think there's any reason to bet against Sacramento if they truly focus in on and be intentional about, this is what we want, this is what we think we can accomplish. I do still have questions, financial questions. I think we talked about this last week, KC. I heard about it initially. I was like, oh yeah, okay, Sacramento wants to, but where's the money coming from? And then the Sac-12 group comes out where these are business leaders and just names, big names, and with big backing here and influence in the city. Okay, now that's a little more legit, because now the NCAA is probably going to listen to that a little bit more, because these are people that actually know how to get stuff done in this city. So I think it's absolutely possible. It's an uphill climb. I don't think it should be taken lightly. I also do believe it has a long way to go. But if you were to tell me a few months from now, a couple of years from now, that there would be an announcement that Sac State was going into the Pac-12, Why should that surprise me based off of what Sacramento has done over the last 10 years, let alone its entire history?
Matt, that's great college stuff, but tomorrow's Friday. Where are we at tomorrow? I feel like I got to know where you're at. But so I'm always wrong.
Everybody thinks I'm going to the main event
yep,
game.
Yep, wrong again.
Everybody and their mother's going to the main
it's
event
gonna
game.
It's going to be at Hughes Stadium.
Folsom versus Rockland.
He's going to be at Hughes Stadium.
Nope.
Kennedy versus McClatchy.
Nobody is going to that game.
We got asked to go to that game, and I said, no, we're going to a different SFL game, or at least I'm going to a different SFL game. For the first time ever, the Davis Blue Devils are playing their first ever SFL game. And they are hosting the Whitney Wildcats. So I will be at Davis High School for Davis's SFL debut against a Whitney squad that's been struggling over recent years, but it's a good opportunity for them to bounce back. They had a super tough preseason. So that's where I will be. Kevin John will be at, of course, the Folsom and Rockland game. So you can see him there and smile and wave at him. And Ramsey, I expect you to be going to that game, of course.
Ramsey will be there.
Ramsey said he was going to be there.
He'll be there. 50-yard line. He'll be there. Where's Davis?
Davis High School. Davis High School.
It's in Davis.
Yeah, it's in Davis.
Huh.
Been there before.
Like, Downtown really? Davis mm-hmm. or old, I don't know.
All
it's
right.
in Davis.
Whitney Wildcats right down the road. Good luck to them. They ain't no Rockland, though. Great stuff as always, Matt. We appreciate you. And as you said, so eloquent to start this, we're almost there. We're almost there. King season is right around the corner. Training camp is right around the corner. We appreciate you so much for being with us here today. We appreciate Matt George as always.